Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm a little pimp and my hair gets blown. Can't tell you pants with my shoes on low.
Welcome back, Titans fan, to another edition of MCM Radio. This is our Jacksonville Jaguars preview for our annual Thursday night Jags-Titans primetime kill two birds with one stone matchup. But we got a full house tonight. We got August West on the line, myself, and Dan O'Mite, who we've been missing sorely. Dan, how are you, brother?
I'm doing very well, man. How are you?
Good, good. So happy to have you on here and just get past the whole Colts game. That was a tough one. But before we start, let me talk to you for just a quick minute about it. Any takeaways from that game? Did you feel worse about the team, or maybe found a glimmer of hope in what you saw?
I think the team looked better overall. Like we were talking about before the show, I love the effort of getting on the board right before the half. There were definitely some mental errors that occurred throughout the contest that kind of made you raise an eyebrow a little bit. But, I was proud of the effort. I just wasn't happy with the end. It was kind of one of those things where I turned the TV off and threw the remote across the room just out of frustration, because it's such a Titans way to lose. You know, they build you up, they build you up, they build you up, and then it's over before you can catch your breath. But this organization it's built up a lot of good feelings for me this year. They're not abysmal like they were the last 2 years. And we're going to get the Colts eventually. That time is rapidly approaching.
We're close. Two quick questions on the Colts, just to kind of take your temperature of it, and then we'll move on. When we took the lead 23-20, I thought the defense was going to stop them. Did you? Or were you pretty convinced that they were going to score? And then the second part is, after they did score and we had the ball, I guess I'm just a blind optimist at this point, Dan, because I thought Marcus is probably going to lead us down and score a touchdown for us to win. Right before the strip sack fumble happened, that really killed it. But I'll give you a chance to respond, and then we'll bring August up.
Well, Ricky Merritt had tweeted something out and said, you know, he was in there with Derek Mason, and they had said seven. It had to be 7 points because three wasn't going to get it done. And I almost tweeted out something along the lines of, I know exactly how this is going to go. They're going to get down there. They're going to be forced to kick the field goal. Luck's going to go down there and score, and that's going to be that. It's easy to say that now, but it just felt so choreographed that way. Like like you already knew what was going to happen. I didn't think they were going to stop them. But at the same time, I thought that the Titans had an opportunity to go down there and score with under 2 minutes left. I thought before that strip sack touchdown that they were going to go down there and score. But I knew they weren't going to hold the Colts out on that drive. I knew they weren't going to.
All right.
So he'd just been gashing us too badly with the pass in the last few series. And, man, we definitely need some help as far as defensive backs are concerned. But that's a story for another day.
Absolutely. Let's welcome August on. August, how are you, my friend?
Doing pretty well, man. That was some good stuff there from Dynamite. And Dan, I'm damn happy to have you back on the show, buddy. It's been a couple episodes without you, and it's just not quite the same.
Well, hopefully my schedule's cleared up a little bit and some things are kind of moving in some positive directions as far as family's concerned. So I'll say this. If we're going to do a reaction show on Thursday, I will definitely be on. So Thursday, Friday, whatever.
Awesome.
Nice.
If it's after the game Thursday, that might be a little too late for me, but Friday I would be up for it. Or you guys can do one sans Brandon. You wouldn't hurt my feelings, but hopefully we'll be coming off a win and everybody will be amped up and have plenty to talk about. So, all right, well, let's dig right into a few things. I wanted to knock out a little bit of the injury news because Thursday's going to be here before we know it, and it's going to be hard to keep up with all this. So me and August, definitely August, pretty much said Parrish Cox got a concussion on the play. He identified that right away. That it was confirmed that he's in the concussion protocol. I don't think the wording was specifically that he was concussed, but he's in the protocol, and we're pretty certain he won't be playing Thursday. So that means Bryce McCain moves up a spot in his lineup, which does not make me feel very good, guys. I'll just go over all the injury stuff, and then we can kind of hash out whatever kind of sticks out. The other big thing was Spain. Even though the injury looked bad, they had to cart him off the field. They're expecting him back in a few weeks, so it wasn't a season-ending injury as of right now. But the flip side to that is it looks like they're going to keep Schwenke to start and not. I know. I'm sure they'll activate Tritola. Yeah, yeah. Schwenke's starting. Malarkey said today. DeMarco Murray was held out, but that was just a day of rest, kind of veteran thing. Rashad Johnson didn't practice today, and Tajae Sharpe ended up with a sprained knee. They said during the Colts game. I think I missed him going down with anything. So other than that, that's about it. Even though this is definitely the biggest. How can I say this? This is definitely the how injuries has impacted us the most this year, because the other big injury, like with Wormack going down, Klein has been just as capable, if not better. He was rated really high. So I'll start with you, Dan. What's your reaction to the injuries today?
Well, it definitely hurts. You know, Quentin Spain, I think, was doing a good job for us up front, and it's the first time in a long time that we've had some camaraderie along the offensive line. And if you listen to the commenters talk on Sunday, they spoke about how tight-knit that offensive line group is. It's funny, they didn't start saying any of that stuff until after Chance Wormack was hurt and out of the lineup. But I definitely think that hurts. Everybody knows my opinion on Brian Schwenke. I think he sucks. He doesn't deserve a place on this team. And Parrish Cox, you know, I mean, yeah, he's more of a playmaker and not a cover guy, but he's definitely going to be missed out there on Thursday, I can say that. Now, the Jags, they don't have the most prolific offensive unit, but again, when you've got two guys down like that have been solid contributors for this team so far this season, and they've been guys that have helped keep us in games and move the ball, it definitely hurts. I would much rather have Parrish Cox and Quentin Spain out there on Thursday, that's for sure.
I think we can all agree on that.
Well, dude, I mean, you know, when you look at it, the Quentin Spain injury, I think really, really hurts. I mean, he's been one of the biggest revelations over the past 2 years on this entire roster. God, I hope that Brian Schwenke doesn't actually start on Sunday. I would almost rather see them just throw and deal with whatever mistakes he's going to make. Just because, I mean, Schwenke was so bad. Having watched a little bit of the All-22 film over the past day or two, especially on the play that, you know, the scoop and score that effectively ended the game. I mean, he just got annihilated, and there's absolutely no reason he should have. Ben Jones did everything he could to come over and help him. But, I mean, as soon as that pass rusher got his hands into his chest, Swinkie was on his heels. And, on a drive like that, you know what's coming. You can't make a mistake like that. I mean, it was like watching God, who's that horrible center we had back in Vince Young's era? Fernando Velasco?
No, we'll see, Fernando Velasco, Leroy Harris.
Or Leroy Harris. Both of those guys really did the same thing. Dude, they would just get knocked back into the middle of the pocket almost every single time a big play came up. A pass rusher knew they could bull rush right at them, and that's just not a good sign at all. However, the biggest injury out of all of the ones that we just talked about, I don't think the Tajae Sharpe injury matters that much, because in all honesty, we have to be real. When you look at what he's done over the course of the season, it's mediocre at best. I think he's still got a very bright future. I think he's learning his way. I think he's adjusting to the NFL game, but he's not a significant part of this offense right now at all. I would almost guarantee if you go back and watch it, he's got more drops than he does receptions. Parrish Cox has been really, really good this year. Okay, he went from a guy last year who was up and down, who gambled, got beat sometimes, came up with some big plays sometimes, to a guy who's broken up at least two passes every single game and has been pretty solid against the run. He's been a very, very good complement on the other side of Jason McCourty, and we have nothing behind him at all. At all. Bryce McCain, Valentino Blake, none of those guys have been able to do anything to the extent that, I mean, I said on the reaction show, and I still stand by it, I'd almost rather than throw Kevin Byard out there for 50% of those outside snaps and see what happens. I mean, I think he's got the ball-hawking instincts to at least be able to handle some of these wide receivers, especially if he can get some safety help. And Rashard Johnson, I like him. I think he's a good, a veteran guy to have in there. But Damian Stafford should have his job.
Yeah, why is Damian Stafford not starting? That's my question. He looks so much better out there on the field. It feels like that if him and Byard could lock up those two positions in the very back of the defense, that we'd be a lot better off going forward, but they just haven't made that move yet.
I think if Norris Searcy was healthy, then they would probably be a little better there.
Yeah, true. Stafford's played well, and I like – the fire he brings. One thing about the defense is I'd like for him to be a little nastier, and I don't know who the vocal leader in the secondary is at this point, and Stafford, he really enjoys hitting people, so I enjoy watching it. Now, as far as with Byard, I think LeBeau's just afraid to have a rookie back there. I don't even think he had Polamalu starting very significantly when they drafted him. I think the way he handled – well, Steelers, when LeBeau was there, rarely started a
– I mean, they took Polamalu fifth in the draft as a safety. That was, unheard of back then. I mean, that was –
Yeah. And I don't think – I think he still used him a lot like we are with Byard. Now, I don't remember who they had on the field at the time, that Polamalu was supplanting. So maybe that would be something. But Johnson's been adequate. But obviously, I guess it just depends on where we end up in the season. While we're still in the playoff picture, even though we're coming off a painful loss, we're still right in the thick of this, guys. So I think LeBeau is just the type of guy that's going to lean on the vets until there's nothing significant to play for. But that's my guess. Now, with Stafford, I think he is slowly taking the starting role from Searcy, even though I think Searcy was out due to an injury, right? So I know Stafford
I
got
the
start
games,
in that place.
Yeah.
Last two. I'm looking at our injury report now, and Searcy's not on it. So that's kind of something to monitor. Maybe I guess we'll have to see who's going to be the starting strong safety there. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's still Stafford. But one thing oh, go ahead, August.
It's not going to matter if Bryce McCain is the best we could do on the outside, and if Sean Spence is still the nickel linebacker, who's just been absolutely brutal the past few weeks.
Yeah.
Is the trade window closed now?
No. Patriots traded for a linebacker today.
Yeah, but
we
only
need to trade for a defensive back. You got to call the Browns up and be like, how much do we got to pay for Joe Hayden here? You guys are terrible. He could really help us out here. We've got an onslaught of draft picks. If we're going to contend in this division that we can win based on how everybody else between us, the Jags, the Colts, and the Texans are playing, he could really come in here and help this football team out. I don't know what it'd take to get him, but John Robinson has been a wheeler and dealer so far, and we definitely need help.
I mean, they're not going to do anything by this point. I mean, we're playing in 2 days.
Oh, well, yeah, it wouldn't matter for the Jags game. But I think even with everything going on, we still got a chance to beat the Jaguars. So I would be for, especially if it's one of those deals like where he got Murray, where we just swap positions in a round or a real late pick. I don't think they would. It probably wouldn't take much to get Joe Hayden. Apparently, the Browns, they're already shopping Joe Thomas, even though they said they wouldn't at the beginning of the year. And what I'd heard is everybody on the roster is up for grabs except Terrell Pryor. And I don't even think Pryor's on a multi-year deal. I think they signed him to a minimum one-year contract. So if they don't re-sign him before the year's up, he's going to hit the market and really do well for himself if he keeps playing the way he has been. Well, in that vein, Dan, the only trade windows that I've seen open up today is Torrey Smith, the wide receiver that was for the Ravens and has been on the Niners. He's a speedster, you know, go route type of guy. What about making a move for him? Would you be in favor of that if the price was right?
Despite him being a Raven for so long, I've always been a fan of Torrey Smith. I think he could come in here and help this team out. Absolutely. I mean, just look at the wide receiver core. It's not fantastic. Really and truly, at those two positions, wide receiver. Go ahead, August. Yeah.
Absolutely no, because Torrey Smith is kind of like Mike Wallace, the same sort of thing, straight line runner. That's pretty much all he's going to give you. And Marcus is not a great deep ball thrower. I'm sorry. If we're going to get a deep ball threat, it has to be like a DGB type person who can win, you know, but better than DGB, that can win a 50-50 ball. And I don't think speed is going to be enough to make up for Marcus's lack of accuracy on deep throws. I don't think it's quite worth it. I think Kendall Wright can do better in that role than anybody that we're going to get in a trade.
Okay, well, let me play devil's advocate. Normally, at least the past few games, he's actually overthrown the receiver on the deep routes. So maybe a little more speed there. And I'm pretty convinced that we will spend a draft pick at some point for a speedy wide receiver to stretch the field. So maybe that's not a guy at the top of the draft, but let's say they shoot for somebody in the fifth or sixth round. If that would get Torrey Smith, I think I'd be in favor of it. But that's just me.
Okay,
I'm not saying it's going to happen, but
I'll take this thing off the rails. Say we trade for Torrey Smith, even if we don't give up that much for it. They're not going to connect more than maybe 3 out of 10 times that we go for him. I would rather spend those 10 snaps, and Dan, I want your reaction to this because we were texting about it yesterday. I'd rather spend those 10 snaps handing the ball off to DeMarco or to Derrick Henry, who has completely disappeared over the past two games. This is a team that gave significant run to Bishop Sankey and Antonio Andrews last year, and Derrick Henry's gotten 3 carries in 2 weeks. And has not made any mistakes out on the field, really. That's to quantify that. I don't care if he ran over Mike Mularkey's dog. Okay, Dan, do you have any idea why Derrick Henry has disappeared?
I have no idea. I reached out and haven't had a response yet. I think they're kind of keeping that tight-lipped. I don't know what's going on there, but it is kind of disturbing. And I'm getting to the point to where I'm feeling like we're overusing DeMarco Murray here. If we continue to go down this road with him, he's either going to get hurt or he's going to flame out. He is an older back. I understand that he's being very productive for this team. But I would much rather see us throw it. I mean, run it on third and short. We tried two third and short throws last week. Well, on Sunday, both of them failed.
We threw it on third and one, and punted on fourth and one.
Yeah, and you're telling me that Derrick Henry couldn't pick up 1 yard here? I know that guy can pick up 1 yard.
And DeMarco's in on pace, Dan, for like 400 and some touches at this rate. And I love DeMarco. I've been so thrilled with his production. He put up another 100-yard effort. I think that's three in seven games, and we didn't have one all last year. So, but I want to see us running a little bit. Me and Artis were talking on the reaction show that I would be fine with us running it three times in a row. And if we're on the opponent's side of the 50 or 45, I'd rather us be more aggressive. If it's fourth and one at their 43, the way our special teams has been letting us down, what do you feel more comfortable with? Us being able to get a yard when they've revamped the whole roster to be smash mouth and get the tough yard, or punt it away and have our special teams try to cover the kick?
Run the ball until you can't run the ball. Nobody has stopped us. The best drive we've had this entire year was against the Miami Dolphins. We ran the ball 13 times on a 13-play drive and scored a touchdown. And DeMarco and Derek and Marcus all had rushes on that. Run the ball till you can't run the ball, period. That's not a knock on Marcus. That's a knock on how soft every other defense is in the NFL.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't understand at the same time. You see the run game working, and then you go away from it, and then you got to boot it away. Those two passes that I was talking about earlier, they didn't cost us the game, but they might as well have based on us having to boot it away. I just don't understand why they get away from the run. No one has been able to stop us this year, which is a great feeling compared to, you know, the last few years of CJ being here and last year with Bishop Sankey and Antonio Andrews. But, yeah, I just don't understand the play calling at times. It really boggles my mind.
I think we're all in agreement there, especially we want to see some production out of our 3 second-round picks, especially since we didn't spend it on a corner, and it turns out to be a real area of need right now. So I guess time will tell, and they have to, especially with a day like today on a short week where they got to rest DeMarco, you'd think that they have to be thinking, this is the time for Derrick Henry to get 15 carries or something against the Jaguars, especially since as much money as they've pumped into the defense, they haven't been able to they haven't really got much out of that. So, but we can save that for the Jag segment when we really get into the matchup. I was born to get some fist in your face in a place and I'm about to stop clearly. So you're ready. We got a guest on the line for our Know Your Enemy segment. Like we had told you previously, we're going to try to get beat writers and any people covering our opponents when they are outside of our division. But when it's a division rival, we don't care what they have to say. We're going to bring in our people to talk. So please welcome back for Pepe's Corner, Matt Neely. How are you, Matt?
Honestly, terrible. That game Sunday was awful. So, and actually, I think, I'm not sure who it was that said it earlier, but the moment that we got the ball to go on that the last drive, I said, there is no doubt about it. We are going to kick a field goal. They will drive down and score, because I've seen this game happen like pretty much every year for a little over, honestly, almost two decades when we play the Colts.
You sure know how to paint a pretty picture.
Especially at home.
Yes. Yes. That, that was, it was, you know, one of those games where you just have to go lay in your bed and stare at the ceiling until the sun comes up the next morning before you can understand what's real life.
you took it pretty hard, didn't you?
Yeah, because, you know, we get this time where it's like, all right, this is the big game. You know, if they beat the Dolphins, you know, one team will suck for the rest of the year. The other team will be good. They have to beat the Browns. You know, it was kind of close, but who cares? We still won. And then you get to the Colts game, which is the real test. And I don't know if I can remember a loss that hard in the last 5 years that mattered so much. So, yeah, I took it a little hard, but we're just going to keep pretending like it didn't happen and move on towards the Jaguars.
All right, let's get into it. I have tried to keep up with the Jags, but their uniforms are so ugly, it's hard to watch. I'd actually see that Bortles today, when asked about the color rush, said he preferred the Titans jerseys. So I'm hoping he throws a couple footballs to the guys in the Titans jerseys. But what I wanted to start with is I'd seen August, one of our favorite draft prospects, Jalen Ramsey, has been playing well, but he got ejected in the past game, but I didn't see what happened. Did you?
Is that for me or for Matt?
For you, August. Sorry.
Oh, no, I saw a little bit of it. I mean, it was just a little bit of tussling going on, and, you know, Jalen Ramsey, he has that edge to him, that kind of edge that I like, the reason I think he's going to be a superstar in this league. And he doesn't like being pushed around like a rookie. So, yeah, I mean, the one thing I will say, when you're that young, and I think he had another dust-up with, what was it, Steve Smith Sr.?
Yeah.
Earlier, where he felt like he was being disrespected. I mean, that puts a little bit of mark on you, especially as a rookie, as far as a guy who can be agitated, a guy who can be provoked. And he is certainly not somebody that needs to be getting kicked out of their game. Yeah, I don't know. Still love me some Jalen Ramsey. That's all I got to say about that.
Shades of Cortland Finnegan?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was telling somebody at work the story about him getting popped on the sideline and Andre Johnson and Jacoby Jones ripping out a chunk of his hair and that whole fight going on. Yeah.
Nice. Dan, what's up with the guys with the senior now, like August mentioned, Steve Smith Sr.? That seems to be relatively new. Is that just them bragging because they've gotten laid?
What I really think it is that European football is becoming a lot bigger here in the United States. A lot of these superstars, such as Neymar, who goes by Neymar Jr. with Barcelona and all them, has started like integrating over. And I'm telling
Dan,
what it is.
I love you, but Steve Smith Sr. is not sitting around watching Premier League on a Wednesday.
I'm telling you, these guys do, man. I'm telling you, they do. It's gotten humongous, and you know, you see a lot of these NFL/football mashups that the NFL puts out. It's becoming a thing. It really is, and you're going to be seeing more of it in the future. Trust me.
And that was our soccer segment. Moving on. Matt, what matchup, maybe player to player or position group versus position group, are you most interested in seeing, let's say, Thursday night?
I'm interested in seeing Blake Bortles versus our defensive line. Also, if you know, he's averaging about one interception per 10 dropbacks. So if we can keep Sam Spence off the field for 10 plays in a row, chances are we got a pick. So I think our coverage versus
Hello.
Has been awful. Yeah, he's been awful. So making him look about like we thought he was going to look this season will require not having Sam Spence on the field. But I think our coverage for our on Bortles and our pass rush is what I'm kind of looking for. I think if we get good pass rush, then we should win the game pretty handily, I would think. But I'm definitely probably wrong because they tend to disappoint every once in a while.
It happens. And it looked like the Colts really max protected, just sent out two wide receivers and mitigated our pass rush pretty well against with an offensive line and some tight ends that most people had never heard of. So I'm a little nervous about that aspect of it. If they showed the blueprint of how to beat our defense, especially with Parrish Cox on there. But August, does Blake Bortles have the ability to do what Andrew Luck did, or is he going to throw Kevin Byard his first interception?
I don't know. I mean, their coaches don't know. Blake Bortles doesn't know. I mean, he is still, as he came into the league, I mean, he's a gunslinger. You don't know what you're going to get drive to drive, game to game from the guy. Now, he's got pretty good wide receivers. The thing that scares me is he's got pretty speedy wide receivers, which can give us a little bit of trouble. The run game has not been that great for him. The defense has not been outstanding, but it's been the reason that they've had the limited amount of success that they have. But I'm telling you, as much as we're going to try and break this game down and talk about it, Thursday night games are a complete crapshoot. You have almost no time to game plan. Your guys don't have time to get healthy. It's really morally despicable to an extent that the NFL makes these guys play this game on such a short turnaround. There's absolutely no telling what's going to happen. But I think that bodes in the Titans' favor a little bit because they are more talented right now than Jacksonville is. Jacksonville's got a lot of great young guys. The Titans have a little bit better of a veteran team.
What's been your take, Dan, on the Jags this year, especially with Bortles? I feel like he's the wild card to this game. You know, we make him look like crap, and he's looked like crap a lot this year. Then I'm convinced we win.
Yeah, I don't know. It's Blake Bortles started off terrible. Then he kind of seemed to hit his stride, and then for some reason, every offseason you read about how the Jaguars are going to be good and how they're going to take over the league, you know, the division and all those kind of things. I don't know. I personally think he's terrible, but when it comes to the Titans, that doesn't really seem to matter a whole lot. I'll be interested to see if he can hurt us with Julius Thomas and Mercedes Lewis. I think that might be the only way that they're able to really stick a knife in us. Other than that, I feel like Jarrell Casey and some of these other guys can get at him. Going back to last week, it was pretty disheartening to see this defense only get two good shots at Andrew Luck on an offensive line that's supposed to be banged up. So I don't know. I think we're going to make this job a lot harder. Dick LeBeau with rookie quarterbacks and quarterbacks that just aren't really up to snuff. He knows how to pressure them and pin them down and make life difficult for them. But like August said, anything can happen in these Thursday night games. I'm more inclined to think that this Thursday night's game is going to be more like some of our classic Monday night games against the Jets, where it's just you're coming off of a short week or what have you, and there's just some ridiculous play going on. But Blake Bortles, you know, I'm surprised they've stuck with him this long as far as I'm concerned.
Really? I'm not that down on him, but I think he's shown about what he is, you know. But then again, that I don't know if the coaching staff has done him any favors. They've been taking a lot of heat. So, Matt, if we beat the Jags, do they fire the coaching staff, you think?
I hope not. As long as they can keep those guys, I think we're pretty set.
Hell yeah.
If I were the Jags fan base, I think they should try and stick with him at least a few more games. But firing midseason with Bortles, that seems like a recipe to screw up a young quarterback. That's why I'm still like, let's be patient with Trubisky and Mularkey. That's what I worry about, is that they could screw him up. But I would add that Blake Bortles has an excellent Wikipedia club with the Barstool Sports guys. One of the highlights of the month when he goes on there. It's hilarious.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I've listened to that. It's hilarious. Let me piggyback on that, Matt. Not the Wikipedia club, but as far as ruining the quarterback and maybe some of our concerns with Marcus, because it has been a hot topic. And so many people are crapping on my boy Mariota. So what do you think, let's say stat line, that you, how can I say this? What's the bare minimum that you expect out of Mariota for us to have a chance of winning the game, especially in Thursday, the next game?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to bring up a stat that someone on Reddit posted. His name is Cowboy Dan, and he projected Marcus's stats this year to be 29 touchdowns, 13 picks, 9 fumbles with a 61% completion percentage. That projects to be very close to Steve McNair's co-MVP season, 32 touchdowns,
yep,
62% completion, 8 picks, and 13 fumbles. So that brings up, you know, the topic, what's really the standard, like Cowboy Dan pointed out. But I expect – honestly, for every game for Marcus to come out and play well, I know that he's had a hard time taking care of the ball. He has cost us a few games, but I expect him to do well. The coaching staff really should put him in positions where DeMarco Murray is the guy that gets the ball. I mean, he needs the ball a lot. I mean, you guys talked earlier about Derrick Henry being on the sidelines. I think there's a reason he's on the sidelines. He did drop a ball last week, which might have pissed him off, but DeMarco is keeping him on the sidelines. Every time he touches it, he's just beast mode. He's wearing down. I kind of think he is, but that's what makes Marcus, turn into a really good player, I think. And I expect him to have a really good game this weekend, even though, or this tomorrow, or 2 days, sorry. But it is a Thursday night game, so you don't know what can happen.
But see, I got to respond to that, Matt, because like this is a discussion that we've been trying to push, I think, especially this week, but over the past 2 weeks. DeMarco Murray has been an absolute revelation. He has been so important for this team. They talk about how good he is in the locker room. He was so on board when they drafted Henry after, bringing him here. DeMarco Murray is a very, very good running back, very important to this team. But he is not so good that he should be suppressing a guy like Derrick Henry's carries. I can't imagine a team in the NFL, no matter what their defensive makeup is, that wouldn't justify Derrick Henry getting at least 10 carries every single game. Because the combination of them two, you keep DeMarco fresh. Derrick Henry's not a bad pass blocker. He's a pretty good receiver. I mean, the one bad drop he had this week, which the game was pretty much over, the one bad drop he had this week is really the only big mistake that he's had. At least use him as a short yardage specialist so that you're saving DeMarco a little bit. Like, that's what doesn't make sense to me. This team needs to have at least 5 games out of the course of this season where we run it 10 more times than we throw it. And they've done a good job of keeping it balanced, but it should be more overloaded to the run, because our defense is really, really good, and our rushing game is unstoppable.
Yeah, I will say, like, to kind of touch on the point you had earlier, on, like, 4th-and-1, like, why the hell are we not going for it? We have a guy that made a living in college on scoring and on getting 2 yards when they go for 2, and a running back that knows how to find 3 yards every time. And I agree, like, I think he should be out there a little more. I've seen, during the game, DeMarco waving the coaching staff off, for players to get back on the sideline. You know, I've seen him do that, and I wonder, you know, it might get into the game. They may have promised him a certain number of carries. I don't know the long-term plan for DeMarco, but I do agree. I want to see Derrick Henry more, especially as a fantasy or previous fantasy, and I had to drop him. But I'd like to see him carry the ball more, personally. But I just think DeMarco has been good in the games. I think he's probably, you know, fighting to stay out in the field, which you can't blame him. But that might be a coaching problem. We'll see.
And one addendum to that, Brandon, I'll let you respond to this. The other thing I've noticed over the past 3 weeks is there's been a lot less of DeMarco and Derek in the backfield at the same time. You know, that was a huge part of the offense over the first four or five games. You don't see that quite as much anymore.
I think that was part of the exotic stuff, and I think they're slowly just realizing that just plain old smash mouth is a little better. You know, some of the misdirection stuff. And I'd said I'm in a fan of a little bit of that. Give the defense something to worry about, especially early on in the game. When we played the Browns and the very first play of the game was a designed quarterback run to Marcus and he took it off for 41 yards and then they had to keep a spy on him virtually all game. I like that, you know, but I wanted to respond to your point, August, with Henry is the one thing that I would put on Derek is when he is on the field, he's got to catch that ball, you know. he really does. If he's got one target a game, he's got to catch it because they can't just put the Derrick Henry out there and only run it with him. He has to have some threat in the pass game. He can't be a tell. Okay, here comes Henry.
But
he's here to get one of his 10 carries a game. He's got to catch that when
He's been a good receiver. And in all honesty, even if he catches that ball and we go into the end zone, we're never going to make that onside kick. Special teams.
Oh,
gosh. Complete boo-boo. I mean, I never knew we were never going to get that onside kick.
They can't even field the opposition's onside kick when they know it's coming.
When they know it's coming.
Yeah. We should fire our special teams coach.
Well, it's becoming more and more evident that our special teams players are as big of a problem. If the coach says, and I know you're being sarcastic, If the coach says we are expecting an onside kick or a chance at one, and they put everybody up to be ready for it, and then we just screw it up, it blows me away. And I don't know if I'd have Supernaw in that position to begin with. He doesn't even have the best hands. And then against the Browns, they got our safety in there. It just seems if I am an opponent and I'm thinking their special teams suck, we're going to try to catch them in something. And you look, why wouldn't you kick it to the guy that is most likely Butterfingers? You know, I feel like the weakness in the special teams now is less the coach and more the players. But then the argument to that is, well, don't have the guys that can't catch the ball on the hands team. You know, I don't know. It's frustrating. But, Dan, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to the whole Derrick Henry stuff we're going on around about here.
Yeah, I'm with you as far as the misdirection stuff. They just want to play it a little bit more straightforward. But I'm also with August in the sense that we should be running the ball 10 more times than we throw it at this point in time. The offensive line clearly likes going out there and run blocking. It's working. We know Derrick Henry is not a Bishop Sankey or Antonio Andrews type back. Maybe they're trying to save his legs. I mean, he may be showing fatigue from that last season with Alabama. I don't know. But he definitely needs more carries. Without a doubt. And like we touched on earlier, I think he may get them this Thursday.
I hope so. I think we're all in agreement there. The point I was getting at with Marcus, though, is, you know, as bad as his stat line was, and everybody just, not everybody, but there's been a lot of negative noise his way. And kind of to your point, Matt, that he's going to project out to very similar to McNair's co-MVP season. I think that's a false equivalency. I don't know if the numbers tell the whole story, But if you have 232 passing yards, two touchdowns, I think that they sold us that this is going to be – that we're building a team that can win with that. I don't think that Marcus is ready to be the reason that we win, but I feel like he's playing good enough for us too, and we got rather close. We've been close most of the games, actually, but I think it's unfair
every
that
game.
So many – yeah, every game. I think it's unfair that everybody's like, oh, he's, you know, he's missing five or six throws a game, blah, blah. Yeah, he probably is going to do that. And I know we got a lot of issues with the offense, and we can crap on the coaching and all that, but we need to run the ball more. And Marcus is doing enough for us to win most of the games, other than a couple games when the turnovers killed us. But I don't know. It's been rather frustrating. It's like so many people have watched a different team than me. Am I the only one that sat and watched Zach Mettenberger, Jake Locker, Vince Young, Kerry Collins play quarterback for us for the past decade, and now they're crapping on Marcus?
Chris Palmer.
Rusty Smith's got to start
Panty.
For us. What's everybody expecting? Yeah, to me, Marcus is a revelation. I guess that's why I've been, you know, such a defender of him. It's like, I don't know what team you've been watching, but he is the best thing I've seen line up behind center since Mac 9. Am I the only one that feels that way?
Well,
Matt,
see,
how do you
feel? Perception is,
oh,
as far as some of these, you know, couch potato pundits is concerned, is that out of Marcus, you don't, outside of the runs, you don't see any of the big splash plays down the field. And I think that's something that people get hung up on, despite the fact that we're scoring more points than we were last year. We're moving the ball much better than we did last year. But because he's not throwing it 40, 50 yards down the field for a touchdown every other series, like Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees, one of those kind of guys, then people are kind of down on him. And I think it's disgusting, quite frankly.
So you're saying the problem is people aren't comparing them to other Titans quarterbacks. They're comparing them to the best quarterbacks in the NFL now. What kind of logic
Absolutely.
Is that?
I don't know, but I know for a fact that's the way a lot of these fans think as far as some of this stuff is concerned. And, I mean, look, our offensive game plan is different from almost any other team in the entire league. We're doing something that is kind of deemed outdated, but it's working for us. The results are there. We're in the games. And eventually, hopefully, it's going to go our way. It has, you know, prior to last week, we won two straight. We have another chance to get back on the board this weekend. And I'm right there with you guys. When you've got Rusty Smith and Vince Young and Jake Walker and all these guys that just look completely apathetic back there, and we're doing nothing to help this offense, so we're having to lean on Chris Johnson to break off a 60-yard run for us, something that was never going to be, you know, an every down thing. And
right.
Now you got a guy come in and he's been solid. Yes, he's made some mistakes. This is his second year. Really, he's only a year and a half into his tenure as a quarterback for this team.
18 games. He just completed
18
his 18th
games.
Game.
And he has a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. He's rushing the ball very well without taking big hits. And even though there's been like two games where like he made a mistake on a final drive, he has been super clutch at the end of the half. Even last week, he had the go-ahead score. At that point, it's on your defense to stop them, and the defense didn't hold up their, you know, their side of the ball. It's tough to ask a quarterback to have two go-ahead scores in the last 4 minutes of the game. One day he will be great, but it is a process to get there. That's all I'm saying. The one thing I will say, I think Titans fans have been beaten down over the past several years to the point that when you see a team be consistently bad, I think you myopically think that teams are either horrible or great. And great teams are great every week. And horrible teams are horrible every week, when really you're talking about the top two and the top bottom team, or the bottom two teams in the league. Every other team goes kind of up and down. Divisional games are weird. I hate the Colts. I was so furious after losing that game. But we have to keep these things in perspective that progress is being made. Matt, go ahead and rain on that parade.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the it's nice to have a fan base that seems like it cares, honestly. That may be like rock bottom, maybe. But, yeah, it's strange. People don't remember that to the point that we got to Rusty Smith starting at the Texans, which I still to this day believe was the worst performance in the history of the NFL. To get to that point, you know, injuries, just bad play by everyone, that's not happening this year at the quarterback position, which is a surprise. And stability is something we have. And I mean, we got 3 wins, 7 games in. Like, honestly, that's one more than we had last year. I don't know what else people are seeing. I am getting sick of seeing the Mariota sucks, Mariota this. Yeah, he has sucked in 2 games. Everyone that watches the Titans will say that. No one's going to defend him. But he's going to get better. It's pretty obvious that this guy's got everything we wanted when we drafted him second. So I whatever he's done to piss off half the fan base, I don't know. But at least people care. That's a solid point there. People care.
And they showed up. They showed up for the game on Sunday. I will give Titans fans credit for that.
Yeah, and I hope they show up on Thursday too. I know I've said a couple of disparaging
you know
things,
what?
But
Mike Keith was touching on that earlier in the week. Fans better turn out for this game on Thursday. You know, last couple of years been horrible. Fan attendance has been bad. Over the last 2-3 weeks, we've seen an uptick in that. It has to be a good crowd for Thursday. I mean, this game is already a laughingstock because they've thrown us with the Jaguars yet again on prime time. But they've got to turn up in a big way on Thursday and help this team win.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to piggyback on August's point. Other than the very top couple teams and the very bottom, it seems like the whole league's 3-3 or 3-4. Everybody's within a game of each other. So for people to jump off ship now, it's crazy. You know, we're going to be mid-season and still right into the playoff picture in our division. And it's not like last year where everybody in the division – I mean, it's similar to last year, trust me, where we were within, you know, 2-3 games until the Texans finally pulled away. But we were losing games in some awful ways. Now we're still in there. We just got to turn the corner. But anyway, let's go around real quick. August, I'll start with you, then Matt, then Dan. Any final thoughts on the Jags matchup? And give us a prediction. And then just pass it around.
Oh, God, like I said, Thursday games are completely unpredictable. But I think Sunday was the first time I thought that this team played a little soft. They weren't as physical. They weren't as mean. And they weren't the kind of smash-mouth mentality that really drives the offense and the defense. I think they're going to get back to that this week, and I think they're going to – you know, we're not going to blow anybody out. This team's not going to put up 45 points at any point over the course of this season, but I think we will dominate time of possession, turnover battle, those sorts of things, and we'll come out with a win.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that last week they did look soft, and they looked like way more aggressive versus the Browns than they did last week, which I you know, classic Titans to show up for a huge game like that and perform worse. This weekend, or I keep saying that, Thursday, I think the Titans, I honestly would not be surprised to see a 6-6 tie like we had Sunday night, but I'm going to go Titans 17, Jags 16. And I think that, you know, if we got a win last week, the game Thursday night would have been, you know, as loud as it's been in that building in a long time. And they did – I think they blew a chance last week. I really did, to build some momentum. But I think that they kind of get back on track, and we'll just have to figure out next week where they're going to go from there. But I think Titans win.
I'm with August. I think they came off a little soft last week. It's a tough game. I think it's a tough loss and probably going to be hanging over their heads for a couple days. I think the Titans win, but I think that there's going to be some fireworks somewhere throughout the game. A crazy play, a crazy turnover, something along those lines. It's going to be a barn burner, I think. I just feel like both teams might be exhausted going into this, but I think the Titans win.
All right, well, I got a little analytics for you guys. The Titans are averaging 20 points a game. The Jaguars are averaging 19. So, mass, guys. We're going to win 20-19. Lock it up. All right. August had a really good topic, so we're going to go off topic a little bit. Matt, please stay on with us for a few minutes.
Sure.
The viewership for the NFL has been down, and we kind of wanted to go over maybe a few of our ideas here at MCM Radio on what's causing that. So, August, I'll let you take lead on this.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, been a big topic of discussion, you know, radio, TV, that sort of stuff. A lot of different variables that everybody's thrown out for why it is, but NFL ratings are finally dropping after being such an unstoppable juggernaut for really the past at least two decades. So I kind of threw it out there to everybody, come up with, you know, around three reasons for why NFL ratings are dropping, and the overall popularity of the sport has kind of been down. The number of people playing fantasy football has been down. Daily fantasy sports has been down. You know, it's not just the TV numbers. So, Dan, go ahead and give me your first one. We'll kind of do a round table. Everybody's first one, everybody's second one, and then everybody's third one.
Well, I think if you look at the college football season this year, you're seeing a lot of crazy games, a lot of close games, a lot of upsets. I feel like not every game in the NFL matters as much as it does in college. And it's just, let's be honest, like the way that they go out, and I've heard my dad, who's been a long time college and NFL fan, say, you know, he'll watch, you know, some of the games other than the Titans, and he'll be like, they're just loafing out there. It just, you know, it seems like their heart's not in it. They're doing it for the money. It's so far this season alone, I can't speak to any other seasons prior to this, but it just doesn't seem as much fun as it has been. And I can't really pinpoint as to why it is, but it just comes off as being kind of dry and unfun at times, especially with some of the things that are going on as far as the players are concerned.
Brandon, what's your number one?
My number one's officiating. And this is just kind of from a personal level. And as a Titans fan, I feel like we always get, like, not even the B team. We get, like, the C and D team of the officiating. But the way the NFL, and I did a tweet during one of the games, the game to me is, you know, run, play, flag, pass, and complete. Another thing, you know, another play, flag, punt, flag, you know, then – finally, somebody kicks a field goal, commercial, kickoff, commercial, next play's a flag. It's just crazy how the game's officiated. It's not consistent. Nobody knows what a catch is. And realistically, if you are in a close game, I personally feel like the refs are going to alter the outcome somehow. So that they're my biggest complaint. I used to watch if there was people throwing a football around on television, I'd watch it whether I cared or not, and I preferred the NFL. But now it's to the point where I'll watch a little bit of the primetime games, and then I just make sure to hone in on the Titans games. I am tuning out on a lot of the other games and the officiating, and I'm talking about, you know, some of the actual stuff that's gotten legislated into the game too, like the penalties for celebration. Or how they treat the quarterback, you know, if he gets breathed on. I understand that they're trying to protect players and with the safety, but I think they've overcorrected with a lot of it. So, Matt, how about your first one?
My first one, I think that on viewership. I think it's down because it's so accessible now. The media is viewership regionally is not down. I personally every Sunday watch Red Zone Channel on the bottom TV and then the Titans game on the top TV. And I wonder if the viewership accounts for
rich
Red Zone.
Guy.
Probably does. Not a rich guy, just the guy with two televisions. But I will say that I think that, like, even a guy I just discovered Reddit 3 years ago, and getting on it, you can find a link to any NFL game. I don't want to be a narc, but you can find a link to any game. It's in HD, and you can stream it through a media player on your computer or phone. And, you know, my roommate watched the Vikings game on Sunday on my computer. I wonder if that accounts for it. Also, the NFL media being strict with their media is kind of ridiculous. So I think that, you know, the NBA viewership is growing while they allow their media to be more accessible. And the NFL is turning downward because theirs is hidden. And I just don't know if it's that or if it's something else. Now, I'd like to, if it's okay with you guys, go to my second point, which touches on something that was mentioned earlier, with the daily fantasy and fantasy football. Is that all right?
Yeah, go for it.
For sure.
So I work.
You're in a safe place here, Matt.
Thank you. You know I love a good safe space. So I've worked in daily fantasy for the last 3 years for two different companies, and I can assure you that that is because of the legalization of it, the making it illegal. That was a huge problem for a lot of companies. They saw their numbers drop. FanDuel and DraftKings are struggling to even pay their vendors right now. They're struggling to pay off the commercials from last year. I don't think it's really about daily fantasy. That seems to be working for the NBA. But for the NFL, the daily fantasy stuff, the sharks are so big right now in that pool that people tried it for a season. It's 3 years old, 3-4 years old. They tried it for one season. They tried it for two seasons. They've lost money. They don't really care anymore. And that is exactly why that is trending downward. So that's just something I want to touch on for that.
Oh, Matt, you and I need to have a side discussion. We'll do a little mini podcast about daily fantasy and the decline of it. There's a fascinating business aspect to that. However, my number one reason that I think NFL ratings are declining this year, and I think it's not necessarily going to go away, is because football, as much as I love it and as much as I love the Tennessee Titans on the professional and on the college level, is one of the most morally bankrupt enterprises left in the USA. When you talk about the scandals that have gone on in college football, like with, you know, Baylor, whatever school you want to look at, try and find a college baseball team or a college basketball team or, you know, swimming, whatever, that has had anything on the level of kind of grossness and the institutional cover-up. You know, in basketball, guys get paid. In football, there's really, really like heinous criminal stuff that gets covered up. And it has bled over into the NFL where they can't even properly regulate, you know, domestic abuse, all of that sort of stuff. You throw on top of it, you know, the concussion issues, the fact that the NFL owners have tried to skew studies that have been done and tried to pay to invalidate studies that have been done, proving the fact that their players are, you know, going into dementia and killing themselves before they're 50. You don't have to be really tuned in to at least feel the repercussions of that. And I think that is really starting to bleed over into the general populace. It's starting to affect the game. It's affecting the way people look at the game. I mean, you really could, you outside of an African warlord, you couldn't find a worse group of people, really, than the collective decisions that NFL owners have made.
Oh, Coney 2016. That was going to be my next one, August, and you said it better than I could. So I'm going to skip to my other one was kind of lack of star power. And I know you guys might have to kind of come along with me here a little bit on this one, but as much as Peyton Manning grated on me, I think he was just identifiable. You knew who the top players in the league were. It was Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, and Peyton never turned a commercial down. But the ones he did, like I said, even though I wasn't a fan of the guy, the commercials were great. And now you have Aaron Rodgers. Those Green Bay Packers commercials look awful. I mean, them screaming in the locker room is like the fakest thing I've ever seen. So you have no Peyton Manning, and I know, Dan, maybe you would have a number on it, but there has to be 20, 25 million football fans that just followed him wherever he was going to go, right?
Oh, absolutely. I know guys out here that are Vols fans, and back when they're all Colts fans, and then they switched over to being Broncos fans, and now that he's gone, they don't even bother following NFL football, as sad as that is to say. All I was going to say, I didn't mean to cut you off. There are just regions, specifically in this state as well, that are just, they're all about college football. That's the way it's always been, and that's the way it's always going to be for them.
Yeah, so the other side of that coin was Tom Brady, and he's been caught up in 2 years of litigation that finally had him suspended over a deflated football. And I think it's just, you know, who is the face of the NFL now? Who's the star power? It's not there. They tried to get Cam Newton up there, and I do like Cam Newton, but any time he loses, he gets up there and comes off like a bitch. I'm sorry. You know, he gets up there and most people are not going to be able to root for a guy like that. I don't know. I think a lot of it is lack of star power or the NFL not finding the proper way to market them. And then you take into consideration that their top two guys, Peyton Manning, we will not see play again. And Tom Brady was suspended for the first 25% of the season over deflated footballs. So I think there's a lot of fans that would tune in to see those guys that haven't.
Well, see, here's
the
problem.
Okay, hang on, hang on.
Is that – go ahead, August.
Okay, yeah, this is going to be my number two, and then Dan, you'll go next, and then Matt, you'll go next after that. I will not try and let this sprawl out too much. The reason I think the NFL has an issue with star power, in all honesty, and, man, coming off this week, it's almost a perfect thing, Jim Irsay and Peyton Manning. The rules that they push through to let DBs not be able to touch wide receivers and to make everything about the passing game was the worst decision that the NFL has made in the past 20 years. That doesn't have to do with the fact that, you know, they're robbing their players and not taking care of them as far as their health-wise. Because it puts everything on the quarterback instead of having it be a balanced game. The reason running backs are their kind of life expectancy in the league is so short is because so much is put on the quarterback that they're not allowed to get into a rhythm, get into even a sharing sort of situation. You're looked at as medieval, you know, when you're a team like the Titans that has a great running game and is trying to win that way. So a guy like Aaron Rodgers, who puts up better numbers than almost any Hall of Famer that's ever been out there, has a down year, and there's Packer fans somewhere on Reddit that are wanting the guy cut or wanting them to draft somebody in the first round to be the heir apparent. Like, there's too much focus on wide receivers and quarterbacks and pass rushers as opposed to the entire NFL team being important. And I think that also plays into the fact that teams cut older guys way too early. They'd rather get a young dude in there who doesn't know what he's doing than pay that extra million or two for the veteran minimum.
I'll say this. I'm kind of right there with Brandon. There are no more heroes in the NFL, be it because, you know, there's no loyalty as far as some of the organizations are concerned anymore. You know, you talk to older guys like my dad and some of the people that you grew up around hearing all these stories. They would talk about these guys that are on these teams forever, and they were all about the team. And it's just not like that anymore. That coupled with, if you are a good player, do you piss off your big billionaire white owner? Then all of a sudden you're being railroaded by the media on ESPN and everywhere else. And it just leaves a sour taste in everyone's mouth. The good guys who are trying to do the best they can, if they slip up once, they get thrown immediately under the bus. And the other guys are in it for the paycheck. And, you know, something can come along and they say, well, you know what? I either want a contract extension. If I don't get that, then I'm out. And I'm going to try to force a trade. People are tired of hearing about that. I know I personally am tired of seeing guys that have come on this, come through different teams. They've been standouts, and then all of a sudden they're like, you know what? I'm out of here. And I'll tell you another thing, too. The Rams leaving for L.A. did not help matters out at all. If the NFL thinks it's a good idea to move a team to Canada or over to England, they're sadly mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, what you got?
Well, really, you know, the talent. I was thinking about that earlier. The talent level, like Antonio Brown's the number one receiver now, and like Randy Moss was such a bigger star than him, and it is a factor, I think. But I honestly, you know, I work in marketing, and I work in social media. I'm aware of what's going on currently, so I honestly think that the problem is obvious. I don't want to come in here with a scorching hot take, but I'm about to. The ratings are down, I personally believe, because the statistics that they're pulling are being kind of skewed by the media. I know this sounds crazy, but, you know, in the 18 to 24-year-olds are not watching television anymore. It's down, I think it's down between 9 and 12 hours a week from where it was 5 years ago. And they're not watching it on their television, and they're not doing things the same way. They might watch the replay later. You know, TV viewership in general is dropping so quickly that I don't think that the NFL should feel like they're above that. And I believe they're getting burned by the media right now with all these stories. I don't think that it's that serious. You know, humans adapt. We get our media the way we want it. That is what I personally believe is the reason why. And people are still watching football. They're still talking about football, but it peaked on television. But it is not going to go anywhere in the next 3 years. People are still going to consume that. I believe that most of these stories describe the data of TV viewership and do not look into alternative ways to view the media. So I think it's simply kind of a grab for clicks, and that might be part of it. I think that's making it a bigger story than it should be.
I will piggyback on that with my third point, and it's almost kind of in the same way. The way that people consume sports and care about sports is so different now. When you look at 20 years ago or so, like, you know, yes, the number of games per week and, you know, the days that they happen was a lot shorter. All that sort of stuff going on. When you look at the success and the massive amount of ratings and cash influx in the NBA and in Major League Baseball and even hockey over the past 4 or 5 years, it's regional TV contracts. It's even had a huge impact in college football, as opposed mm-hmm. to the NFL, which still goes with a completely national-facing sort of idea and product. And the worst part of it is the knot they've tied themselves in with the TV contract. The Sunday night games, the Sunday day games, the Sunday 3 o'clock games, those stations get to pick the best matchups. So the worst matchups are put on Monday and are put on Thursday, which should be the biggest spotlight. I can't think of any other business that would make that horrible of a decision. And almost kind of the encapsulation of it is, so the NFL decides to try and branch out, get on top of social media, become the first major league sport to stream a game on Twitter. And nobody wants to buy Twitter. Every other social media platform will sell for billions of dollars, and nobody wants to buy Twitter because of, you know, all the dynamics that go on with it, and it's not a money-making process. If you're going to tie yourself to one social media platform, why would you do that? Just their media approach is so completely backwards now, as opposed to the progress that the MLB and the NBA have made.
They won't let their team tweet out gifts.
Yeah, I'm a
Twitter
stockholder, and that really sucked when they they haven't made money for 10 years, and then you think it's time to invest in it, and then they get burned by a lot of companies. They're just not sustainable for a long term, and I don't know if the NFL partnership is great for that with Twitter. I don't know if that's a good idea.
Well, because nobody cares about Twitter ads, and it's also there are areas of Twitter that are the absolute like backwater of the internet. And I mean, I wouldn't want to be a company that buys a whole bunch of hate speech and all that sort of stuff. They're so backwards in so many different perspectives. Maybe they'll fix it over the next 4 or 5 years, but I don't think they're going to fix it unless there's a big turnover in the ownership groups and the commissioner. Dan had his drop off. Brandon, do you have one more?
No, just to piggyback on what you're saying, and then we can wind this bad boy down. I think that the NFL kind of doubled down on the cable or satellite, subscription-based TV service at the time where it did peak. They came out with their own channel, which is good, and we like it. But then to try to put games on it, like our Thursday night games on the NFL Network, the only people that will see it is either somebody that's streaming or in the Nashville, Jacksonville area. You'll get it on your CBS. But for a cord cutter like myself that's in Knoxville, still in the state, I don't get the games. And I don't have ESPN. Monday Night Football, which was their flagship thing, what they've had on ESPN for years now. I grew up with it on ABC. They need to get their shit together and get the games back on over the air. That way everybody sees it. Because what, 500,000 people are dropping their cable every month? So, but anyway, Dan, anybody have any other points on that? I feel like we've done a pretty good job, actually.
I think that pretty much covers all the points. Yeah, basically, the NFL sucks at sharing their media, and that is looking like a problem for them. It's too long, didn't read for that one.
Okay.
All right, Matt.
Okay.
Well, go ahead.
Hang on. I'll wrap this up with one quick question that I'd like both of you guys to answer. Would it be worth it for the NFLPA to get a serious, hard-nosed president and director and completely sit out a year until they fix some of the major problems in terms of health care, how many games are played, really address some of the serious issues and make ownership be punished? Because right now, you could honestly, if the NFLPA started a Kickstarter, they would probably build up enough of a strike fund to sit out an entire year. Do you think that would be worth it, Matt?
No, that to me is the death penalty. That would be going, that would be instant death for them. I don't think that would be a good idea at all. But I see where you're going with this, and I do think they need to sit down and reevaluate, let the players speak up. The NBA, I keep referring to them, they've done an amazing job of listening to their players and coming up with ideas from them, I think that it would help the NFL just to listen to their players, because I think they do a terrible, terrible job of doing that. While I don't agree with your point to sit out a year, because I think that would be a total kill to the NFL, what college would be going on, I think that that there is some opportunity for them just to listen to their players, because sometimes they seem smarter than the people in charge.
It would be tough for me to advise them sitting out. And I think it gets to the root of the problem and why I don't see it really getting much better for the NFLPA is the average contract or the average career forms short. You're going to have a handful of guys make it 10 years, but like you hear all the noise about when it's up in 2020 or 2021, they'll probably be a strike because the players are going to want so much more. 80% of the players in the NFL today will not be in the NFL when that's up. So you have to convince a whole ton of players, 50% or more churn, all the new players on their first contract that they're going to have to strike. I just don't see it happening. So would I like to see the ownership get put in their place and be like, you know, I really liked your point, August, about how morally bankrupt they are in the sport in general. You know, we still have six-year-olds clanging into each other, risking concussions. But I just don't see that it'll happen. And obviously the billionaires can go their whole life without making another penny and be fine. They're just set up to win that battle.
I know, but the NFL players at some point have to bite the bullet. Baseball players have done it. Hockey players have done it. And basketball players have done it. And they're so much better off for it. But, yeah, let's wrap this thing up.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us with another episode of MCM Radio. You can find myself at Drunkest Droog on Twitter, for Danomite at DanomiteTN. August is at AugustWest_MCM. Matt, you're at MattNeely_, correct?
Yes, I still haven't gotten the non-underscore, so I'll let you know when I get that one.
Yeah, get you a blue check, too. So, and thanks for joining us, Matt. I look forward to talking to you again. We'll have you on again hopefully a couple more times before the season's out. So all our listeners out there, make sure to give us all a follow, review us, find us on Facebook. We got a group on there. And to our subredditors, we love the feedback from you guys. So let's get a win Thursday, turn this thing around, because I think if we can be 4-4 at the midway season, everybody would have taken that in the off season. So let's be positive, be good to one another, and enjoy our game Thursday. Take care, guys.
Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.